Hi there, everybody. I'm Lucas Martel, creator of Walkabout Mini Golf. And today we've got Finbar Hawkins and Bram. I can never pronounce your last name. I'm just going to start off with
sorry
that.
About that.
Tween?
It's a stupid. Tween. It's a stupid.
Tween, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just throw a couple extra T's in there. Of Aardman Animation. And we're playing through the first nine holes of the new Wallace and Gromit course. I don't even know exactly when this is going to launch, but it'll probably be out by the time this launches. So, I'll just pass it to you guys to kind of introduce yourselves and the roles that you play with kind of Aardman and Wallace and Gromit.
Sure. Hi, I'm Finbar Hawkins. I'm one of the creative directors at Aardman. I've worked in interactive stuff and games and apps and all sorts of things, but last 10 years or so. And Bram and I worked together on both the Big Fix Up, it's a big transmedia adventure, and then recently Wallace and Gromit VR.
So, Bram, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself as you're taking your first shot here?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Bram, and I'm Finbar's co-director on a number of VR and XR experiences we've been doing at Aardman. I've got a VFX background, but I've recently been working in interactive. And I've been at Aardman for a long time now, so I'm really familiar with this universe. Worked on some Wallace and Gromit films in the past. Loaf
and you're
Death,
terrible
example.
At golf.
And I'm terrible at golf.
Yeah, this is the part that I always love because it forces everyone to just sort of like, yeah, to really throws them off their game. And they've gotta, yeah.
Right, if I could just get one through.
So, Bram, I'm also kind of... curious for you, because also coming from more of a film and animation background, how, like, when did you kind of shift over more to the interactive? Or it sounds like you kind of juggle the two of the sides right now, right?
Yeah. The first time was with Finbar again, and it was a Wallace and Gromit project, but it was an augmented reality thing. And that kind of got me in the swing of, like, you know, delving into the universe and trying to, you know, be an active participant in these things. I just loved it. So the chance to do these VR things is something that I relish, to be honest.
Yeah, and I know you guys both worked on Grand Getaway, which was the other Wallace and Gromit VR experience that launched not too long ago. I love that even though, I mean, Aardman is doing stop motion, kind of a more classic old school technique that you guys are really, it seems like you really embrace a lot of the new technology. Has that been mostly just the people that are wanting to get involved to try new things, or what's the sort of impetus for you guys experimenting around so much with VR and AR?
I think it's always, Aardman always want to tell stories in different media, and it's part of the kind of the ambitions that we have as a studio. I think it's a natural progression from the things that are happening in terms of interactive with app development, then into console development, and then obviously XR is a big piece of that as well. But it also means that because of our wonderful kind of 360 environments that we can build, we can be really very immersive, it means that the audiences can get much closer to our worlds, really. So it's a really kind of exciting way of telling stories.
Yeah,
and totally. We really try to distill some of that stop frame essence and sprinkle that across our VR.
Finally got
AR pieces. Well done.
Nice to have Finbar.
Thank you.
Yeah, in fact, that was one of the things that we were really looking at. I think that it was great that when you guys had the VR, when Grand Getaway came out, because the two biggest questions that we had going into this was mostly around the capturing some of that stop motion style, which you'll see as we get here into the house, of actually doing some of what you guys did. I think the one thing that I do kind of miss a little bit is just because we have more of our low poly look, you guys did a great job in Grand Getaway of kind of capturing that, the plasticine sort of look to the characters and everything in a way that we weren't quite able to. But we weren't able to do with the low poly, but capturing that sort of stop motion feel, we always refer to it as on twos, which means that it's animating at 12 frames a second. But it does really do a good job of helping capture that. I think the other thing that was the biggest challenge for us was being a continuous environment. we really had to work very hard to try to get all the different rooms and everything to seam up. I guess you guys didn't quite have to deal with that so much on Grand Getaway because it tended to be you were restricted to certain areas. So they were the all, it's not like all the sets interconnected.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, I think that was absolutely the key thing for working with you guys, right? To get the, from those initial thoughts to everybody really liking the idea of, oh, it'd be great to be playing around West Wallaby Street. And, and again, giving the audiences to be able to wander around it. It's a massive thing. So yeah, it's different challenges because in Grand Getaway, we're resetting, there's a kind of escape room methodology, I guess, it's going on in each of those chapters, which is a different mechanic, isn't it? A different structure. But yeah, that's what I love about this, that we can jump around, go to favorite holes, you know, you can have a really good gawp at things, you can go down the streets. It's all kind of, there's a lovely, filmic sense, right? It's a really important part of it.
Yeah. I know I think it's your turn, Finbar. One of the other things that was also, I think we really looked at what you guys were doing, in VR, it is so weird because stop motion sort of like lives in this world of sort of like the charm is that everything is happening at this small scale, or one of the things that makes it look so interesting is that everything is shot with this very small scale, but then we hop into VR and suddenly the characters are life size. And we kind of tried to match what you guys were doing, just assuming that you had kind of set scale of especially the characters to be sort of what you always thought. But I'm just kind of curious, how did you always think of of Wallace when you're standing right next to him and you sort of see him in full size? Was that a challenge?
Always. Yeah.
It is a challenge because his proportions are quite peculiar. And he can be quite scary if he's a bit too tall, for example. So the idea is to sort of put your put yourself in the place of one of the puppets themselves, if you like. So it's my turn. So yeah, we've struggled with that in the past where we've built life-size sculptures of Wallace. And it's, as I say, he's got enormous hands, for example, which are quite peculiar when you're close up to him.
Yeah. We, I know, we'll see this as we get into the living room here, but yeah, we were constantly battling, like, should we make the coffee mug feel like it's the right size to the player, or should it feel like it's the right size to Wallace? And luckily, it seems like one of the things that we've also tended to do is go with a more oversized look to a lot of our props anyways. It has a little bit more charm to it.
I think that's right. And there's something about the exaggeration of their world anyway. It's not reality, right? It's an animated world. It's got to be charming and have that kind of warmth. So it's always a kind of fine balance, not making it, this isn't kind of verisimilitude, right? It needs to have that kind of balance, really.
Totally.
Yeah. Which I think you've done a fantastic job at. But yeah, I know we gave you a few problems.
I was just about to say, one of the things that we always think about is like, it's like big hands making small things. So all the props and things in Wallace and Gromit's universe do tend to be chunky and oversized. So you're absolutely on the money with what you've done.
I know one of the other things that we did do a little differently on this course than most of the other courses is that because it's the footprint of this is actually a lot smaller than most of our other courses, just because it needed to feel like this very small kind of dense house. So I would say that the density of this course is way higher than any other course that we have done. And it does mean that we probably even went a little bit further with even like more polys, but sort of just more intricate detail and everything. And something that we had a lot of conversations about, especially this last couple of months as we were getting closer on things, was just trying to cram in as many sort of environmental jokes as possible. I'm kind of curious when you guys are doing that on the film side of things, because it seems like a lot of times, oh, we just lost Finbar. Finbar is traveling at the moment, so he is on an interesting connection here.
I'm back.
But yeah, I'm kind of curious when you guys are doing set design for a lot of these films, like, how much are you thinking about just sort of like building it more like a live action set of just like make everything as realistic as possible? Or are a lot of the gags and things that you're putting in specific, like, oh, we know that this one's going to be on camera, or how are you sort of like managing all those gags that you're putting in here?
Oh, it is like we do try to make the models as feel realistic, you know, and we just pack every scene and every inch that we can with gags wherever possible. So bookshelves and newspapers and all of those sorts of things, you know, we love them to have a sort of revisibility, if that's the wrong word.
But, that's a good word, Brian.
Just that sort of repeated viewing is rewarded because the world is so dense and rich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. That you'll go back to the films and they'll always afford something in them that you maybe hadn't spotted before. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to get them kind of, as Ram says, as rich as possible. So it's a really important part of our job as well to make sure that when we're working with guys like yourselves, that's an integral part of it, because people really want to wander around and look, and you know, and they're also getting gags in wherever we can. That's a big part of our job. So make it funny and warm, really.
I remember that we went back and forth quite a bit. I think the titles of the books right over here were one of the ones that our team had a lot of fun coming up with, sort of like Aardman tone, sort of like, what would the punny, like, our team both loves and hates puns, but like just like the more groans you get seems to be like the best solution. I have a question for you guys, because we do have the whole course and we were only going to play 9 holes just in the time we have. Would you guys actually prefer to just maybe do a very slow walking tour, or do you want to keep going with the golf?
Yeah, I don't mind. We can walk around.
Yeah, a walking tour is good for me. I might hold you up otherwise.
Well, this is I've had a lot of practice at this game. I know one of the other things that this is the first time that we have ever done is actually getting voices in game. I guess, Finbar, I'd love to hear about. So one of the things that we did early on is that we sort of like came up with a script, but then you rightfully sort of like rewrote that into the proper sort of like Wallace tone. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what that sort of, like how you find that, or what it like, is there a secret to sort of like making things sound properly Wallace?
I've done so many Wallace scripts now. It's a kind of almost second nature. And
you are Wallace now, aren't you?
I am Wallace. But like the first big one was the big fix up I did a few years ago with Bram, but also working closely with Merlin, who's co-directing the new film with Nick Park. So I was kind of really shadowing him and learning Wallace from a script stage, his balance, really. He doesn't don't want to overdo him. He's always got kind of, you know, obviously there's a vernacular that he has, because he's a Preston lad. There's obviously lots of lummies and crackings and things like that, but it's always trying to keep it, not giving him too, not making him too wordy. That was always kind of a balance. So it's kind of, and again, I think it's these things that an audience know. They know his lines really well, so they kind of almost kind of want to get those, but in slightly different contexts and things. And in terms of characters, he's always, you know, he's a lovable buffoon, essentially. So he's a bit, he's a bit nonplussed about the world. He doesn't really know what's going on to a certain extent. And that's obviously where Gromit is the faithful hound and helping him out. So it's that, in terms of story arcs and things we got into later, that's how you have to make sure that interchange is always there, that between the two of them. And yeah, I guess it's just the scripts that we were doing for this were obviously to give him, because it's, people are not, they're roaming around, they might hear the odd muttering phrase from him, things like that. So it's just, again, giving it a little bit of a couching him. So you know, in the sense that he knows he's there, he's muttering to himself, that kind of stuff, or he's working his way downstairs. So yeah, there's a kind of what I call it Wallaceization of the script, really, is to get it get his right warmth in there, essentially. That's really what it is.
So so not being from the UK, I know you mentioned that Wallace is is a Preston lad. I would imagine that there's a lot of things that are very distinctly sort of Wallace, or are a lot of his sort of like the words that he uses a lot, like cracking, all that sort of thing. Is that actually sort of like part of like more of a regional dialect, or is that really distinct to Wallace?
It is definitely a kind of a regional thing. But I guess probably, you know, a cracking is one of his phrases that he'll use more than most. It's always couched in, Nick is originally a Preston lad, you know, Lancashire lad. So it's that kind of, it's based on a lot of, his childhood and the people that he was around. There's always a kind of lovely humor that's going on, in terms of that kind of, kind of that kind of northern energy, really. It's always not taking itself too seriously and getting that in there. Talking Wallace is kind of second nature to me now. I've done so many of them. But you always kind of innately feel, oh, that is Wallace or not. Do you know what I mean? It's like so many scripts you work on with a certain character, you really get to know the ins and outs of them, and you know what would be right with him, and when something's slightly overdone or when you need to dial him back. It's that kind of thing, really.
I've always felt like whenever I was writing scripts, that was always the moment when I felt like it finally clicked, was whenever a character finally felt like it was starting to talk back to you. And sort of like a lot of times you kind of come up with like, oh, here's the plot. You kind of beat it out and you figure that this is going to be what you need the character to do next. And then you realize that the character doesn't want to do that. They become real enough that they start telling you, no, I wouldn't do that, I would do this. It always feels like something, especially in animation, where a lot of times in live action, the actor will actually sort of push back on something. It's like, I don't feel that that's right for my character. In animation, you don't tend to get that. But when you start to feel it on the page, it's a really, it's a magical moment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think anything like is less is more, that old cliche. There's a lot of truth in it as well. You know, we're always trying to, when we're animating him, not to get overdo again, you know, trying to kind of dial it back.
There's even a bit of a game the animators play where it's like, how long can we hold him in a neutral pose before the next key?
So
there's quite often huge gaps where he's doing very little.
Is that the animators being lazy, or is it now just sort of like they're just like pushing to see how
it is
exaggeration, like how little can we do?
Exactly, yeah. It's all about just pushing the limits, really.
Absolutely. Well, but it's also, sorry, go on.
Oh, no. I was actually going to, please finish your thought, Finbar.
I was going to say that, but I think it's just that letting that character sit in the world, essentially.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And pushing it a bit, really, and not, if he's doing too much, it's not Wallace enough. He's too energetic. So that's always something we were looking into, really.
Yeah. Well, this is also a great spot in the backyard here to kind of, well, we get our first view of Gromit for one, but also this is a good chance that we had to sort of like try to drop in as many sort of references as possible. And I think that in addition to getting the house to sort of all fit together and feel right, but also like, be navigable, there was a lot of time that we spent just trying to place all of the different devices and characters and gags and callbacks in here as much as possible. I'm trying to remember from early on, I think most of the big ones, like we had the wrong trousers from early on. I remember the Top Bun windmill was one that Nick had actually had a sketch of that we kind of interpreted into a whole. Do you remember if there were any others that we sort of like that we have to get that in, or any other sort of like
the classic moments? Big one, obviously. And it's nice to have the gnomes here as well, which are little connections with the new film. So they play a big part in it. So there'll be a, and yes, I mean, Top Bun is very iconic. So I love this scene because it's, A, the light, you've done such a great job with the lighting and getting, again, that kind of warmth of it and the butterflies and everything. So there's a kind mm-hmm. of lovely English kind of idyll about it, like mm-hmm. kind of nice warm summer's day. Mm-hmm. But also because we could be a little bit more freeform, right? That yeah. nobody really knows the whole setup of West Wallaby Street, and we keep it deliberately mm-hmm. that it can evolve. So it was
the
nice
basement,
to...
especially we've commented on how the basement, yeah, exactly. the basement is just like an accordion that will stretch to fit whatever yeah. you need to put in there.
Yeah, infinite size basement. But it was nice to, with this scene, to address it and go mm-hmm. for it with a bit more, right? With all these iconic mm-hmm. Film scenes. And oh well, we missed it. We had the train. That's another in the living room, obviously, with feathers.
Oh
on
yeah,
it.
We had to get fed. Like that was, I remember something from our team. The feathers on the train. We wanted yeah. to have Gromit laying track, but that was just a little too complex to be yeah, building yeah. and unbuilding a hole as you were working around.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And the Jambalista I can see through the window there was a, mm-hmm. It was a lovely moment from. I can't remember which film it is now. Do you remember, Bram, where we featured that for the first time? It's A Matter of Loaf and Death?
No, I think that was it A Close Shave, maybe?
It was Close Shave, of course it was.
Yeah. I know that was one of the original three, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, there's the motorbike as well in the garage. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another icon.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of little things that fans will really pick up on. I think this is also one of the courses that just like the sheer number of original stuff, like almost everything was custom built for this. Like yeah, I know the bulletproof vest made it in. Yeah, the fuel with the coffee dispenser and the tea dispenser and everything. But yeah, so many things that are very specific. I remember in here in the garage just how many things that we were trying to guess because we needed to fill up so much space, and there was a lot of like, is this British enough or is this there were a few things of like, yeah, like very character specific props that we were trying to capture there.
Absolutely. And the little nod here to Preston, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, all those little things. Yeah. And you know, that's why I think that's what I've loved about what you guys have done and your collaboration with us is that we could be, you know, we can suggest certain things that you'd want to see from the films, giving little mm-hmm. clues or that kind of stuff. And it's it affords people want to replay, right? I mean, that's the other thing part about it.
Yeah.
So there's a nice merger between what we're doing with the films and the game.
Yeah, I remember one of the earlier conversations that we had was actually around the gadgets, because you had mentioned, I think that from a storytelling perspective, you guys kind of try to avoid like solving story problems with gadgets. But what we ultimately realized is that as long as it wasn't a narrative device that people really did want to see, because that is something that is so iconic. I mean, between cracking contraptions and a couple of other things, it's sort of like that is one of the things that people associate. So I think that finding that balance is sort of like how much we can sort of lean into the contraption world. Yeah. And I do love how alive this course feels. This is like three times the amount of animation that we have ever done in any other course that we've ever made, I think. So yeah, the amount of animation that went into this. Oh no. Well, we had a lot of fun, and especially Night Mode, which I guess we won't get a chance to show off in this video, but hopefully people see that. I'm glad that that both Aardman and Mighty Coconut have find sheep so funny, because that's been kind of a running gag that we've had destructive sheep in several. I wonder if that actually came from sort of our original love for Wallace and Gromit. That could have been what inspired it, actually.
Well, it's also because Sean came from Wallace and Gromit, right? And Sean is obviously one of our major characters. So there's a mm-hmm. lovely family feel, including the sheep. A throw mm-hmm. to Sean's world in the hard mm-hmm. mode, which is lovely, and get a nice bit of narrative there, you know. It's which is important to us, and a nice bit of storytelling that's going on. And I think that's the thing, because you're going back to using the contraptions. They are how can we not? They're such an integral piece part of the world. Mm-hmm. So yes, it was going to lead. I think you knew from the outset. Once we set on the West Wallaby Street being the course, right? That it was going to bring animation, was going to be part of that. It's going to be hand in hand with it, really.
You've really got to make this, even though it's a smaller space than a lot of our other courses. It's so dense, and it has to feel so alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
but I love all the little touches here, like the when you play through the jam, the ball gets sticky and all that kind of stuff. So there's some nice, there's some nice gags going on, which is again what you'd and sort of in an Easter egg fashion that you'd expect.
Yeah. Maybe as we walk upstairs, you guys can chat just a little bit more about the film that's coming, because I know currently you guys are still in production. I don't know, have you announced a release date for that, or is there anything more that you can tell us about the film that you're working on?
It has been announced now. So it's called Murder. What is it called, Bram? Is it Vengeance Most Foul? Oh, my God.
Vengeance Most Foul.
And it will be out around Christmas time. So it will initially be, I believe, with the BBC. We don't know exactly. It will be at Christmas time. We don't know the exact date yet. And then it will then move on to Netflix in the new year. So that's where you'll be able to see it. It's the finishing touches are being put to it now in terms from an edit point of view. I've seen bits and pieces when I've been fortunate enough to visit the set. And Brian, you've had a lot more to do with it than I have. But
yeah, it's looking great. Yeah, the shoot is going to wrap up within the next month or so, I believe. Don't quote me necessarily on that. And then there'll obviously be post-work up until probably October, as late as October. Yeah. But
yeah,
it's looking great.
Like last minute.
And it's a really fun story, this one.
Yeah.
The trailer has gone out, so we were keeping it secret because we didn't announce things like the main criminal is back as Feathers. You've seen the train downstairs. He's been a hugely popular character for Wallace and Gromit fans. So there was a lot of excitement about him coming back, and of course he had to come back. So it's just Nick finding the right way to do that, and that's how the story kind of evolved. He was very keen to get Feathers back. He just didn't know that kind of way in, and then that was the kind of breakthrough. It's a kind of double whammy, really. We've got, it's a new Wallace and Gromit film, but also Feathers has got this his own kind of moment. So he's the supervillain that everybody loves to hate, essentially. So.
Yeah. We were really glad to hear when Feathers was coming back. And I remember even a couple of the earlier conversations that we had. I'm just going to take a glance into Gromit's room just for a little change of scenery here. But yeah, I remember that we knew that we had to get Feathers into the game just because it was so popular. And I remember early on, because it was so secretive that he was going to be coming back, there was some question of like, oh, when would this be coming out? We wanted to make sure that it was actually after the announcement of that, so that we could sort of play up the Feathers and a couple of the other little, there are definitely some Easter eggs in here that I think once people see the new film, they'll recognize that there were even a couple of call outs in here to it. So
absolutely. It's good. It's good to have those, you know, again, I think it's immersion. People are going to be able to fill their boots with Wallace and Gromit towards the end of the year. We've got this wonderful thing and wonderful game coming out and the film itself. And there's lots of energy, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, and I really like that people can go from the film, a film universe, into a game universe and vice versa. So it's, and we can make these little crossovers between them in terms of Easter eggs or little narrative clues, which is great.
Totally, yeah. If I can shift topics drastically just to something that I'm particularly kind of curious about. So we got a chance to tour the production facilities there in Bristol about a year ago when we first started working on this. And one of the things that I loved to see was how physical, I mean, obviously it's stop motion, it all has physical, but even that a lot of the production tracking was still being done on paper. And just sort of like how you actually have like, index cards to show like, this stage is available and this person and these sets and all that sort of stuff. I'm kind of curious because I feel like a lot of the stuff that we do at Mighty Coconut, a lot of the team kind of comes from a more traditional background as well. And even things as simple as that, sort of like working in a more physical way. I'm kind of curious when you guys are doing more of the interactive stuff like Grand Getaway or things like that. Is there a big sort of like shift in how you go about producing something like that, being in a digital medium, or do you still kind of follow some of the how much are you able to sort of like pull from the like the stop motion background that you guys use?
I think for interactive projects we tend to exploit more modern production techniques. You know, we use Notion and Teams and all of those various shot grid, for example. So we do lean on that side a lot more heavily than a stop frame production does. Because as you rightly say, on the studio floor, we have like giant walls with loads of posters stuck over them and, you know, a day-to-day calendar so everyone can easily see and access it when they're working on the studio floor. But I think interactive teams tend to be a bit more sort of, there's remote work going on, for example. So you have to lean on the more sort of modern techniques.
Yeah, and then, but also there just in terms of concept development, it was very kind of traditional as well, wasn't it, Ram? In terms of we were using storyboarders initially in in the Grand Getaway, that were really, they'd started to fall more into the concept of, because we were working it out. It was a bit more like a theatre scene. Bram and I were trying to work out, we're telling a story, it's got to have these peaks and troughs, but it's you're in a 360 environment, you know.
And yeah, you're right. In that sense, we did lean on sort of on the Big Fix-Up, for example. We did physical sculpts before we ever got into digital modeling. So we did sort of do traditional sculpts. So there is that crossover. And I think that sort of helps inform the digital doubles, really.
So. Yeah. I would imagine that there's parts of that the process often... And the process is a big part of the result, and changing the process, it could lose a little bit of something, and it might be hard to quantify, but some charm or some tone or something that can get lost if you don't maybe capture some of those old school techniques, possibly.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's very important. So, sorry, Brian.
We'd really sort of study the stop motion process before we ever get into animating our characters. Mm-hmm. You know, we sort of try to sort of work out what things are peculiar to the models that we build, you know, the way the armatures work within them, for example, and the way that CG tends to be a bit more flexible than stop frame puppets. Yeah. So we carefully animate our characters to be a bit more sort of rigid, for want of a better word, and to sort of obey those constraints that you get from the physical media.
Yeah, it's funny. Absolutely. I remember that was one of the animation things that we noticed as we were animating, especially Wallace and Gromit, but also the sheep to a lesser extent, is that because we all have a more traditional CG background, there were a couple of times where there was a tendency to like add a little extra overlap, or like you talk about that sort of like a bit squishier, that you can compress things because you're not restrained by a, you know, an actual metal skeleton. And there were a few times that we found that pulling that back was really what it took to make it land as feeling like a real something that Wallace would actually do, or something that Gromit would actually do. So
absolutely.
Let's take a tour down to the basement as we continue talking here.
Which way are we going, down the stairs?
Let's head down the stairs. Let's head down to the basement just to kind of give people a little sampling of the full environment.
Add to that thank God for Gravity Sketch, really, because it's once we started to get into thinking about 3D environments and the blocking of them and where you were in them and where you were in relation to the characters and where we're going to place the action, and it was just an invaluable tool, wasn't it, Gravity Sketch, really?
Go ahead, Bram.
I was just agreeing with Finbar. Gravity Sketch was a real eye-opener, and these sort of virtual meetings like the one we're having now were so liberating, really, and it totally freed us up to sort of, you know, actually be in these environments and sort of work out scales of things. Mm-hmm. It's such a fantastic process.
Yeah, I remember it was so surprising to find out that you guys, because I believe the newer Chicken Run movie had actually mostly been storyboarded or previs, and like a lot of the sets were sort of like designed and figured out within Gravity Sketch. Did you see that was like a note from like, oh, we all need to start using that? Or was that just someone who thought that was the, how did something like a VR tool like Gravity Sketch work its way into your stop motion pipeline?
I think it was Darren, one of the concept artists for mm-hmm. Chicken Run. He just likes to use it because he's from a CG background as well. So mm-hmm. he likes that freedom to sort of place cameras and sort of put yourself where the director might put themselves mm-hmm. on a set. So mm-hmm. and Gravity Sketch, of course, affords all of that. So
yeah. By the way, just in case anyone listening doesn't know what Gravity Sketch is, it's one of the apps or one of the VR apps that both you guys and we use to create a lot of our environments where you can get in VR, you can actually sculpt out sort of like a room and you can very quickly put some blocks in place to start feeling like how big something is because you can control the scale, but it also allows multiple people to be in a room together. So it is more collaborative and it is almost sort of like dumping a whole bunch of clay on the table and actually working on things together. Yeah. And you can put cameras in and even you can sort of like point to stuff and draw and sketch really quickly to sort of have a conversation. But
I mean, mm-hmm. I spent my life in interactive with a whiteboard, really, mm-hmm. Where it all starts with you just with a marker pen and getting things down very quickly. Mm-hmm. But we were stumbling quite soon into it where we're hitting these issues because we needed mm-hmm. to be able to think about it, visualize it, discuss it in mm-hmm. three dimensions. It was really essential. That was a thank you, Gravity Sketch, basically.
Yeah, it's funny how many other especially animation studios are starting to adopt that because the pre-viz or the storyboarding process is a really collaborative time and there's a lot of things that are difficult to sort of convey with a sketch. That just being able to get in there and like I've even seen a lot of like even in the modern day people actually like they'll take like shoe boxes and like build a demo of the set and like actually have like play, you know, like toys that they're sort of moving around just to sort of like have a way to talk about it. It's really cool to see that there's finally sort of like a more sophisticated way of doing that and that works remotely because there were a few times where I think Finbar, you and a few of us had hopped into Gravity Sketch together just to look at what we had done and even make notes like right within that before we had even gotten all the holes functional just to sort of get scale and all those things worked out.
It's just invaluable. It's mm-hmm. a huge tool. And, but there are also other things that I can see the way you're using lighting to draw the user. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of, and sound to get us to move to certain areas. Because in these VR environments, essentially, we can go anywhere you like. So mm-hmm. that was one kind of mind-bending thing for me and Bram were working on Grand Getaway. It's like, you're the camera. We're kind of starting from ground zero in terms of we've got to tell a story over this scene. There may be some mm-hmm. puzzles to solve. There's some gameplay to indulge in. There may be some animation cut in as well. Mm-hmm. it's that balance all the time and using traditional game techniques of, I can see that's something interesting over there in the rocket that's drawing mm-hmm. my attention. It's all that kind of stuff. It's really important too. So set dressing essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that the sight lines, especially one of the things that we work out in Gravity Sketch from a very early stage, because we want to make sure that you can see where you're going to go in a way that maybe you would work out framings and stuff or in a more traditional film background. But we always think like sight lines are kind of our guiding, one of the things we want to make sure that you can see stuff, but that we also block off things that we don't want you to see yet. So it is not uncommon at all for us to actually put something there to stop you from seeing. You had also mentioned the lighting. I would say that one of the challenges that I think that we did have is that so much of the Wallace and Gromit lighting is so, I almost want to say theatrical. There's always a lot of really, like really crisp rim lights and just like everything is so perfectly framed for that one shot that I think one of the bigger challenges that we had in the lighting is that you can walk anywhere. So trying to capture that more theatrical lighting, but not knowing where the camera might be, I felt like was definitely one of the, I feel like we ultimately got there, but that definitely took a lot of work to find out how far to push the lighting to as closely match the Wallace and Gromit feel as possible. But
you've done a great job, but you're totally right. That whole theatrical feel to the lighting is, it's born from the fact that we are lighting little stage sets essentially. So, mm-hmm. but you're totally on the money with that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's if anyone ever gets an opportunity to sort of like see, especially like any of the Aardman or Wallace and Gromit sort of like behind the scenes stuff, it is fascinating to see just sort of like how those are actually built. And even the fact that the amount of lighting that has to get set up for the scene, because it might take an animator a couple of weeks and the lighting has to live and not get moved for the entire time that they are in that environment. So it is fascinating just how you guys work around those limitations, but then also, yeah, just how much goes into setting everything up and, yeah, and actually dealing with these small physical sets that are basically hot sets for sometimes, yeah, weeks at a time. So yeah. Super cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The fear of walking onto a set and accidentally kicking a light is like palpable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, is there anything else that you guys can think of that you wanted to chat about or any other plugs that you want to make? I know we mentioned that this is coming out July 25th. Probably by the time this drops, it'll already be released. The film is coming out sometime around Christmas. Yeah, anything else that you want to talk about or plug?
I think that's it. That's quite a lot.
It's lots of stuff.
Well, couldn't you have like three or four more features going on at any one time?
I'll have a word.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, it's amazing. Bram and I are just delighted. It's been a joy working with you guys, really. And you've done such an amazing job. So you've really, you've got to grips with it, and I can see the joy in the work you've done, which is a big part of it.
Oh yeah, we're all huge fans. We had a blast working on it. So
cool, great,
awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you everybody for watching. Play the game. Check out some of the other Aardman stuff that's coming out soon. We'll talk to you later.